The marquee matchup of the weekend, Ravens and Patriots. New England's defense has carried them to an 8-0 start, but they haven't faced a force yet this season, quite like MVP candidate Lamar Jackson. Pats lead the NFL in scoring defense. Ravens have the NFL's highest scoring offense. And tight end Nick Boyle proudly boasts they haven't seen anyone like our offense. Kenny, will the Ravens hand the Patriots their first loss of the season?
Well, I picked the Ravens to be able to win this game, and that's because John Harbaugh is really, really good after bye weeks. He's got a 9-2 record after bye weeks, and one of those losses came in 2015 when the Ravens set a franchise record for number of players on IR. So I expect them to have a few new wrinkles that they haven't shown on tape thus far through this point in the season. But to Nick Boyle's comments, he's absolutely right. The Pats defense hasn't seen an offense like what the Baltimore Ravens have, but that's because they haven't seen a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. He's the first quarterback in NFL history to have 1,600-plus yards passing and 500-plus yards rushing through the first seven games of the season. And so the way that the Ravens use him, not only in the run game, but what they do in terms of the passing game, being able to get him out on the perimeter and put pressure on the defense with the run-pass options that he has, that to me is what's going to be the challenge for that Patriots defense. The one thing I'll say about the Pats defense is, we know that they're on a historic pace, but the one place that they can get got is in the run game, because they're giving up 4.6 yards per attempt, which is 21st in the National Football League. So I look for the Ravens to feature a heavy dose of that run game, whether it's Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards. This is going to be one of those fist fight in the phone booth type of games. And the Ravens, I like their chances in that type of matchup.
And the run defense is actually even worse than what you just described when you say 21st in the league over the course of the season. Since week four, so for takeaway weeks 1 through 3, they're giving up 5.7 per carry, which is 32nd in the NFL out of 32 teams. Why has the bad run defense not hurt the Patriots in any way whatsoever? Because you're playing with such a lead so consistently, it's been so impossible to pass on this team. Teams are forced to pass. They can't pass. They turn the ball over. They give short fields. All of a sudden, you're down 17 points. Even in that Browns game, on the second of the three consecutive turnovers, that happened on a 60-yard Nick Chubb run right up the middle where he gashes the defense and then gets caught from behind, fumbles the ball, and obviously that turns into a huge negative for Cleveland after it otherwise would have been the sign of what they could do. Throughout that football game, Nick Chubb was having success running the football. I also think the Patriots are going to lose this weekend, Jenna, and I think that we talk about football being in three phases, offense, defense, and special teams. Pats have played 8 games. If you were to rank their previous 8 opponents and include the Ravens, so 9 available options, the very best offense of the 9 that they would have faced is Baltimore. Mm-hmm. The very best special teams of the 9 that they would have faced is Baltimore. And the second best defense that they would have faced is Baltimore. I think Buffalo has a better defense.
And maybe the very best quarterback Baker out of it.
No, there's no maybe about it. Yeah. People would say, what about Ben Roethlisberger in week 1?
But he was probably already hurt.
Well, yeah, I mean, if his elbow was, you know, 17 passes later, he's going to suffer that major injury,
right,
then how healthy was
he in that game
in week 1 and that Steelers offense was its first game with no AB, dealing with all the transition. So no, this is, and for a while, Baltimore's, all their gaudy offensive numbers were being buttressed enormously by the 59-point explosion week 1.
Miami game.
But now you've played half a season. So every extra game you play, the less impact one outlier game has. So I don't look at Baltimore as the best offense in football, but they have shown that they are clearly a top 10 offense, and the Patriots have been playing nothing but bottom 10 offenses all year.
When Bill Belichick sits down to start game planning against Lamar Jackson. Is there more of a focus on his arm or on his legs come Sunday?
Well, I think you have to focus on his legs, because the Baltimore Ravens want to be a run-first outfit. And when you look at what John Harbaugh and their offensive coordinator Greg Roman are trying to do, they want to change the math in the run game going up against that Patriots front seven. What I mean by that is this. In any defense, you can't account for the quarterback as a runner. So if your quarterback is going to be the ball carrier, then the tailback actually becomes an extra blocker. And that's exactly exactly what the Ravens do. So when you have a situation where Mark Ingram is in the backfield and they're running that power O play, Lamar Jackson is the runner in that situation. And so you've got an extra blocker. So there isn't that unblocked defender that's there to make the tackle at the point of attack. So that's what makes it difficult to be able to defend. And the Baltimore Ravens, listen, they're getting healthy at the right time. Coming off of the bye week, they're expecting to have Jimmy Smith back, Patrick Owonsor, their inside linebacker. But most importantly, in my opinion, Hollywood Brown, who's the guy that's on the outside of that offense, out there on the edge, outside the numbers, who can stretch the field. So that's going to create a lot more room underneath for all of those other receivers, but also for Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram in that run game.
I also want to ask you a question defensively, because I think people say when you play a running quarterback, you keep a spy on him. Man, I watched Bobby Wagner, who might be the best inside linebacker in the entire NFL. I think he's a future Hall of Famer. Be made to look slow and out of shape when they tried to have him spy Lamar. And it's not because Bobby's slow and it's not because he's out of shape, but it's because there's no linebacker in the league that can match Lamar's speed. If you can't effectively spy him with a linebacker, what do you spy him with? A safety? Do you bring an extra safety on the field? Like, what do you do to try to take his legs away when he is not just a mobile quarterback, but he is arguably the fastest quarterback we've had in the league. In fact, not arguably, the fastest quarterback we've had in the league since Michael Vick.
Well, I think we got a little bit of insight in that in the playoff game that they had against the Chargers when they had those seven defensive backs on the field and they challenged Lamar Jackson to beat him with his arm. He wasn't capable of doing that in his rookie year. I think he's capable of being able to do that now. But even beyond that, you didn't have the physicality from the running back position like you do now with Mark Ingram. And I think that has to be the difference. So when you have Lamar Jackson that's able to run the football, then you have the physical presence, that guy that can run in between the tackles, and Mark Ingram, it makes it tough from a personnel groupings perspective to match up well against that Ravens offense. So listen, this is going to be a tough challenge for Bill Belichick. I don't think there are any easy answers. Typically, teams don't feature their quarterback as a running back because they don't want their quarterback being hit. But Lamar Jackson has this uncanny ability to be able to get down before he takes
hard contact. He doesn't get square shots. He gets his shoulder sideways. You don't see him getting lit up a lot given how often he runs. Listen, this next 6 weeks where there's five games, we're going to really find out how. We know the Patriots are really good. The numbers and the records say they're the best team in football by a wide margin. I don't believe that to be true. We're going to find out over the next five games. Baltimore, Philly, Dallas, Houston, Kansas City. You've got five legitimate playoff caliber teams that's going to be playing them with five legitimate above average, if not excellent, quarterbacks. We'll find out who the Patriots really are.
And both of you have the Ravens winning this game.
Yes.
On to the Warriors now. New season, new arena, and new problems for the defending Western Conference champs. Two-time MVP Steph Curry suffered a broken hand in the team's loss to the Suns last night. Curry will have a CT scan to determine if surgery is the next step, but a timetable for his return is not yet set. Regardless, it is not good for a Warriors team with just one win on the season. Nick, what was your reaction to Curry's broken hand and where the Warriors are now?
All right, so multitude of reactions. First one, totally preventable play. Chris Carter laughs when I say this. But this is why trying to take that weak side charge is a dangerous play that should be eliminated from basketball. Aaron Baines, a foot is 7 inches taller than Steph Curry, 80 pounds heavier. Go up and contest or get out the way, because this is what can happen. I've been saying this for 3 years. The worst thing in basketball is these big guys trying to come over, take these weak side charges instead of going up and playing defense, because it's dangerous for both players. Now, one of our best players in the league is sidelined. Some injuries you can't prevent. This is preventable, but everybody takes these damn weak side charges. All right, I'm off my high horse on that.
Now to
the actual impact.
Okay.
For the Warriors, you can argue it's a blessing in disguise. For the Warriors, that team's not going to be great this year anyway. They now are going to have a higher draft pick. Steph, after five straight trips to the NBA Finals, five straight 100-ish game seasons, a little less because he's missed some time due to injury, but five straight very long seasons, he can recuperate, rest. They can maybe up D'Angelo Russell's trade value as far as featuring him. So for the Warriors, aside from the people who paid a few million dollars for the PSLs in their new Chase Center in San Francisco, this is not devastating, it's just disappointing. For Stephen Curry, Chris, I find this very, very disappointing. not just because he's going to miss time, but he's going to miss an opportunity. Mm. He's going to miss the opportunity that LeBron James had a couple years ago, the year Kyrie left. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew that Cavs team couldn't win the title, but we were able to see LeBron as a one-man show, and a lot of people say that might be his best individual regular season ever. The opportunity Russell Westbrook had the year when KD left, before Paul George got there, where he leads the league in scoring, averages a triple-double, and puts his team on his back. Hell, we can go back 25 years. The opportunity Scottie Pippen had the year Jordan retired the first time, when he gets the Bulls to 55 wins, to the playoffs, is an MVP candidate. Steph was going to have that opportunity this year to remind everyone that the old hashtag Steph better actually is true. That opportunity has now been taken from him. Maybe the Warriors are better long term because of it, but for Steph, this is devastating.
No, it absolutely is, and for all the reasons that you just outlined, and it was going to be an opportunity for Steph in the context of the super team era to come out and show his individual greatness. He was going to have an MVP caliber yep. season for this team to be competitive in the Western Conference and get into the postseason, but now that's gone away. But we always knew coming into this year that this was going to be a season of transition for the Warriors just because of all the losses they had this offseason, losing Kevin Durant in free agency, Klay Thompson tearing his ACL in the NBA Finals, losing Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston yep. and Quinn Cook. Like, you knew that they were trying to replenish the ranks and build some more depth, and with that is going to come some growing pains. But now you have an opportunity for extended minutes for guys like Eric Paschal, for Jordan Poole, so you'll get to see them. And then, of course, you can feature D'Angelo Russell and see if you can continue to develop an asset so that when your team is healthy and ready to win again, you could potentially trade him and bring back a complimentary piece to your core of Draymond, Steph, and Klay.
And just real quick, that's such a smart point about D'Angelo Russell, because when they did the sign and trade for Durant, it was not because they thought D'Angelo Russell was part of the long-term future. Mm-hmm. It's you have an asset going out the door. Can we bring an asset in that we could then flip for players that actually fit with Steph and Klay coming together? So it's a great point by you.
But Nick, even though it's a small sample size, it's four games, we haven't seen MVP Steph Curry. They were down 29 points when he got hurt. The team was already struggling. How much of this now falls on, this is what we talked about all week, the pressure on Sean McVay to do a lot without very much. How much now falls on, I know you're laughing, Steve Kerr to say, hey, it was easy the last couple years when I had a stacked team. I don't have that anymore. Let's see what I can do without him.
Well, Steve Kerr talked about it after the loss to the Clippers. He said this is going to be a new reality for this team. Now, I think he was referring to how it was defensively and allowing the Clippers to score 140-plus points. But when you looked at this team, you knew that it wasn't a championship-contending roster. And then based on the moves that had happened this offseason, what the Clippers did, what the Lakers did, knowing the Denver Nuggets are still going to be there, the Portland Trail Blazers, the Houston Rockets.
The Jazz added.
The Jazz. It was going to be tough for the Golden State Warriors. So I don't know how much pressure is really on Steve Kerr. I just look at it from this situation. Steve Kerr has got to do he's got to do his work, actually, as a coach now. There's no more Draymond Green drawing up plays on the whiteboard on the right. sideline in between timeouts. So I just think that he's got to earn his money as a coach, and a big part of that is going to be the development of young talent on that roster.
And listen, we knew that this year there was going to be an element of the Warriors going from the luxury penthouse to, you know, living with the common folk. It now appears that they are, you know what I mean, looking for some shelter. They have dropped down to that level. But some of that has to, we can't say Bob Myers and the Golden State Warriors are light years ahead of everyone and not put on their plate, with or without Steph Curry, how bad of a defensive team this was going to be. We can't talk about Steve Kerr as a all-time, record-wise, great coach and not mention, no matter what the personnel you have, being the worst-ranked defense in basketball is not a personnel issue. That is a motivation issue. That is an effort issue. This team does not have the personnel to be a good defensive
yeah.
team. I'm not arguing
Very
that.
Small backcourt.
But they... Any team, every single year, that is the worst defense in the league, that is an effort issue. If they were the 23rd ranked defense, now again, it's super early. But and here's another effort issue. They've been down 30 in all of their losses this year.
Yes.
31, 42, 34. You mentioned they were down 29 when Steph got hurt.
Yes.
This wasn't a game that just got away from them. I think it was 43-14 at the end of the first quarter to the damn Phoenix Suns. And the Suns are playing better this year. But come on. Like, there is an element of, if for the Warriors, can you do what so many other teams have to do every year, which is get up to play knowing best we can do is the 7 seed. Hmm. A great season for us would be an amazing season for us would be an upset in the first round of the playoffs. Man, that is the universe. The Orlando Magic, the Charlotte Hornets, the New Orleans Pelicans
every year
have been in for the last decade. And you see those guys playing with a level of intensity that you weren't seeing from the Warriors thus far this year. Now they have, the reason I said it can be a blessing for them, now they have an excuse.
I wrote that down. It's an excuse.
Now it's
exactly
like, well,
we lost Steph.
But they were projected to win 49 games this year. Steph Curry was a trendy MVP pick. Mm. That can't all be forgotten at this point. But for Steph, this is killer, man.
And
it's
again,
just a killer.
We don't know how long he's going to be out. It is probably a considerable amount of time.
Probably a couple months.
The question before the season started is now the question that remains. Who are the Golden State Warriors? They don't really know who they are yet.
Well, right now, no. Right now, we know. Right now, they're one of the three worst teams in basketball.
Yeah.
No Steph Curry.
Wow.
They're one of the three worst teams in basketball, hands down.
Kyrie Irving, who through three games into his Nets career is averaging nearly 40 points per game, but with the excellence on the court come lingering questions off the court which have followed Kyrie throughout his career. Reports that the Nets are concerned about Kyrie's mood swings. Well, his new teammate Kevin Durant had this to say: "I look at Kyrie as somebody who is an artist. You have to leave him alone. You know what he'll bring to the table every night because he cares so much about the game. Now, it might not be how other people want him to care about it. He has his way of doing things. I respect who he is and what he does. He has all the intangibles you want in a teammate and a great player. So how he gets to the point to be ready for 7:30 every night, I'm supporting him 100%. All right, Nick, what do you make of all this? Is there more to the backstory than we're hearing about?
Well, Jackie McMullen did a great job reporting this. Now, it should be noted, Jackie McMullen is one of the best NBA writers in the world. She is based out of Boston, and I am certain she was hearing things from the Celtics over the last couple years that maybe even more so than we heard about the maintenance that goes along with Kyrie Irving. Now, what he gives you
is... Well, it wasn't more information than we knew. It was just information that the public hadn't heard about Kyrie.
There have been stories about Kyrie and the things that go along with Kyrie for a long time. Now, when he's giving you 38-6-6, as he is for the Nets right now, you happily take him. He has had the ball in his hands with a chance. They have two losses, both overtime by 1 point. One time, he missed the shot after he did a little slip-and-slide maneuver. The other time, John Morant blocked his shot. So, I mean, they have been in every game, and he's been brilliant, despite the fact they don't have Kevin Durant. But Kyrie's a different cat, man. They want him to show up 2 hours early, like everyone's been doing, like that Nets culture is before practices. You do training table, you then do weights. And Kyrie, that ain't his system. And it's not only, you can say, okay, well, his system has gotten to where he is. In this article, there's an anecdote where they're with the team in China, and they're trying to take a team photo, and they're like, hey, Kai, can you take off your hat? Nah, man. No, Kai, we need you to take off your hat for the team photo.
Like, for real?
That's what Photoshop was for, is reportedly what he said. He's just going to be a lot. And listen, KD's right. You can call him an artist. And a lot of you, listen, so Van Gogh cut his ear off. Like, artists can be different. But it is going to be day-to-day maintenance. LeBron realized it. The Celtics realized it. It's taken the Nets, it would appear, a week to realize it. I think it is, the juice is worth the squeeze because he's such a brilliant player, particularly if you're competing for a championship, but it ain't going to be easy with Kyrie.
To me, I question, is the juice worth the squeeze, especially because you're in a team sport. Now, you guys can make the reference of being in a band and everything, but that's why bands break up. If you coddle people just because they have talent, you're in a team sport. Like, you need people to be consistent, and the other players and the staff. How do they know how to react day to day? So you might want him on your basketball team, but let me tell you something. As far as winning the championship, that's not how you win championships. That's not how you get people to sacrifice. And of course, Kevin Durant, because Kevin Durant is an artist. Of course, he would say that because I need to enable him. So when I come back, because my weirdness, my differentness, like, that's going to be a story.
Absolutely.
I mean, Kevin Durant, the only reason why we're not talking about him now is because he's not on the court. But, man, he's got some issues off the court. And I know through talking to NBA teams, this is the intel that people had about Kyrie. All right? A lot like Allen Iverson. He's not going to take care of his body. He's not going to spend any extra time as far as getting ready to play that night. He's going on pure ability. But that will only carry you so long. He doesn't take care of his body. And once his body starts to fall him, to fail him, is the juice then? What the juice tastes like then? Because his knees, he's had an issue of being consistent, and the Nets have a tremendous program as far as what they do for their players to be able to get the best of their players. He thinks he knows better about it than the training staff, and there's always a problem when you have that thought process.
And what did we learn about the Nets last year? They played so well together as a team, and they went through all of it sort of as a team, and now you have to bring in two big pieces, which, of course, they're the most important pieces, but it kind of fractures that a little
bit. Yeah, but it's worth it because the Nets last year were a good story, and as Caris LeVert talked about in this article, when they started winning games, they'd go on road trips and other teams would compliment him and he'd feel like it was a big brother patting a little brother on the head, like, oh, good for you. And now they're in it. Now, when KD comes back, they are a championship contender, one of the favorites in the East. But the Nets got to hold on for dear life till KD comes back, because what we know about Kyrie is that he is a way overqualified Robin, and you can win a championship with him as your Robin. If he is your Batman, man, things are going to go potentially awry, and some of the stuff you're talking about, see, as far as team sports, it doesn't work if it's your leader. Well, he's the leader right now.
Yeah.
Like, and how is that going to affect the other guys? We'll see. His play has been brilliant. Offensively, he's been as good as anyone in the league so far this year, and we'll see how much the off-the-court stuff
affects. You know how, Jenna, sometimes you get that orange juice with the pulp in it, and it gets all in your teeth and everything there?
Yeah.
Okay, they get ready to get some stuff in their teeth.
Oh, I was like, he's the pulp?
Are you just continuing the analogy? I appreciate that.
No, it's great.
He's worth the squeeze.
Worth the squeeze. Yeah. Talk some Rockets and Thunder. Rockets were hosting OKC. Russell Westbrook and James Harden facing their old team in OKC. They did not disappoint. Russ finished with 21 points, 12 boards, 9 assists, while the Beard poured in a game-high 40 points. Rockets get the win, 116-112. Here is Russell Westbrook on facing his old team.
Inside those lines, there's no friends. Spalding, that's my friend and my teammates, and that's it. But before the game, after the game, I'll talk to my guys. I'm going to talk to them right now. But it doesn't mean that I don't have friends. But during the game, I don't. It's that simple. If you try to be my friend, I ain't going to say to you.
Look, the question coming in were how these two were going to fit on the floor. For obvious reasons, they both like the ball. But how much better does Harden, Nick, fit with Westbrook than he did with Chris Paul?
Oh, he doesn't fit better. Westbrook's just a far better player, so it offsets. The fit is not perfect.
Don't think so.
No. And I don't think it'll ever be perfect. I think it'll be better than it's been the first few games, where they're taking turns early in the game, and most of those turns are going to James Harden. And Harden's shot has not been falling so far this year. The free throw line is what bolstered in last night. He had 21 of 22 from the line, including some clutch free throws late. But this team is so much more capable of instilling fear in the opposition because they do have a second legitimate superstar. But, I mean, the Duncan Robinson fit wasn't perfect. People always say Tim Duncan, the greatest power forward of all time. As soon as David Robinson left that team, he played center the rest of his career because he's a true center. These two guys, the fit's not ideal, but Russ is a top 10 player in the league, and Chris Paul last year was not a top 35 player in the league. So, I don't think the fit's ideal. I think they will find a way to make it work, and they will learn each other's rhythms. And D'Antoni, it's going to be his job to stagger them the best that he can. But the Rockets are a better team just because of the influx of talent and youth, and that, which of course was not in Chris Paul's repertoire.
Right. First of all, I don't know if Houston's a better team. They have a better backcourt with Harden and Westbrook because of, at this stage of his career, Russ is a better player than Chris Paul. It's not a fair comparison to Chris Paul.
Of course.
Now, if you take them at the same age, when Chris Paul, and if you put the ball in Chris Paul's hand and you don't let James Harden be as ball dominant as he is, then we might have some type of conversation. But there is no fit for James Harden. The way they've developed this system in Houston, there is no. Look at all the elite guards that you have in the league. Unless a guard is willing to stand in the corner and wait his turn. That's the only fit for James Harden. Now, the pace that they're playing at right now, the Houston Rockets, it's a pace that we haven't seen since the ABA. And the only reason why they're playing at that pace is because Russ gets the ball and they go with it. That's why Russ fits in. But once they slow it down, Russ is not a half-court sensation. When the ball gets in the half-court, he's not a superstar. In transition, he is a superstar.
Well, last night at the end of the game, I think you started to see some of the things Russ can do in the half court with a team with legitimate spacing. The most critical play of the game last night, Russ drove to the basket, drew the attention at the rim, kicked it to P.J. Tucker, who hit what was essentially the game-clenching three-pointer. Russ might be at his best in moving up and down the court in transition. I still think he's a superstar offensively in the half court, especially now that he has requisite shooters around him. But you, Chris, you said you don't know if they have a better team, but they have a better backcourt. Well, the rest of the team's the exact same.
Well, I mean, I need to see them together. Is Harden in crunch time, will he let Russ drive to the hole? Because he wouldn't let Chris Paul do that.
Right.
One of the big things was late in games, there was no type of continuity, and Chris Paul was not allowed to have the ball. So, yeah, you make a good point as far as in last night's game. But when we get to the playoffs, because the regular season means nothing to this team, all right? They've been close enough. They will be judged based on, are they able to get to a Western Conference final? So in those situations, will Harden defer? Because I watched last night's game, and Russ, to me, is deferring, especially early in the game, to Harden. Harden's pounding it, So to me, there is no fit there. What is the coaching staff going to do to develop some off-the-ball action? To me, that's up to the head coach to be able to get the best out of these two.
Okay, so maybe it's not an ideal fit, but have you seen enough to know that at least it's going to eventually lead to a winning formula? It's eventually going to get them to the playoffs where they want to be?
Well, listen, the Rockets have an excellent roster. They've got a top five player in Harden and another top 10, top 12 player in Russ. Chris is right in that they've done everything that a team can do in the regular season. They've had their guy win a league MVP. They've led the NBA in scoring. They've been the number one overall seed. It is going to be determined as successful by what they do in the playoffs. But I think the Rockets are going, without question, going to be better this year than they were last year. I don't think Harden's going to have to average 36 a game, which is what he did last year, in order
to
get
there. He's trying to.
He has not adjusted his game really at all, it would appear. Russ has adjusted, I would argue, to his
And why is that? And why wouldn't James Harden adjust? Russ has come over from OKC. We knew Chris Paul. Why hadn't Harden adjusted?
Well, maybe Harden will adjust, but up to this point, I think Harden, his mentality is what I've done has been wildly successful.
But they haven't won anything.
Right, but you're talking about will he adjust in the postseason? I don't know. In the regular season, Harden's
I doubt if a player is going to adjust in the postseason after playing the regular season the way they played the last straight five regular season. You would think right now would be the time that he would acquiesce. Hey, Russ, I'm going to give you a little more. Let's see how this works out. But that mentality right there, that's why I don't think that they're better. At least they had a system that they were able to get close enough to Golden State. What's going to be their system now? Oh, I'm just getting ready to take it. Russ is a sidekick. To me, Russ is not a mentality of a sidekick. And I believe ultimately that will be a problem.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.